The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Hard Shoulder today coming from the roof of News Talk Towers, celebrating the sunshine. We're going to be celebrating the sunshine in a global sense, an international sense, with Fionn Davenport now, the travel journalist and Lonely Planet author. Fionn, how are you?
I'm good, Kieran. How are you?
I'm great. I love when it's sunny. Improves the mood.
Absolutely.
Does it improve your mood?
Absolutely.
You've got those great sunglasses that tint outdoors.
They're not great when you go indoors because it makes you look shifty. But
I was going to say, shifty is a word.
Make you look shifty.
One word I'd use. Yeah. Anyway. They're a certain style, yeah.
You know, your hair grows faster in the sun.
Does it?
Yeah, and your nails.
Sorry, a guest yesterday accused me of going bald. They were on the phone, even. Yeah.
You're not going bald.
They were talking about having to wear... And Ken O'Flynn, who's an Independent Ireland TD from Cork, said, Kieran, it's really important to put sunscreen on, especially if you're going bald like you or me. Yeah, I know.
That was a drive-by and a half.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable shade thrown out of nowhere. Wasn't even a challenging political interview.
You're tall, so even if you were, which you're not.
Yeah, you'd well, be Irish. Listen, anyway, yeah. Look, it's thinning maybe in parts, but that's different. That's different. Yeah. So, every week, obviously, we're talking about different places with the Ultimate Guide. And what we rarely talk to you about is just kind of general travel advice and travel experiences, given how long you've been doing it. How long have you been kind of making this your living?
Since 1991.
Wow. What was the first trip? How did you get into it?
I was 91. A tour guide. I was a tour guide in Ireland. And I needed to earn money during college. And because I'm half Italian, there was a tour company called A Touch of Ireland. And the owner, Sue Ada, who just recently passed, actually, very sadly. And there weren't very many of us who had good Italian and were interested in travel. So she offered me and then my brother a job just bringing, in the days of like when people had organized tours just exclusively. So busloads of Italians would be unloaded at Dublin Airport, put on a bus, and then we would drive them around the country and show them all the sights.
So would you be with them then for a few days?
For a week.
For a week with Italians, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And then I did French tourists, and then I did American. And that's how I got into, like, actual
travel. And at the time, though, like, as you say, you just happened to have Italian, so this was a kind of a way of making a few bob. Well, can you remember when you thought, or did you ever think, I should try and make a living out of it?
Well, I mean, I joke.
You've just been stumbling along all the way to this point here.
It is more or less, that is not a million miles from the truth. So in 1993, I had just given up on doing a doctoral dissertation in history. And what happened was is that then I got one of the Morrison visas and a lot of my friends had been moving to New York. So I moved to New York and look, long story short, I got a job literally just by dint of needing a job. I got a job at Fodor's Travel Publications and I became an editor. I was there for the guts of 3 years. And then I realized rather than edit travel adventures, I'd rather have them. So I left and became a travel writer. And within a couple of years, I was commissioned by Lonely Planet to do one of their books, or like Spain. It was a very early edition of the Spain Guide. And I've been doing it ever since. And I've always said, is that I'll do it until I figure out what I want to do for real.
Now
I'm staring at the gun of pensionable retirement. And I'm like, oh, I'm still doing this.
Yes, yeah. You didn't think you'd be replacing it with just golf every second day of the week, retirement,
absolutely.
Pottering about the garden.
Absolutely.
There you go. What then, in all those years, is your favourite place you've been to?
Very difficult to answer because I've loved lots of places. I could say Donegal is one of my favourite places, but so is Bangkok, as is southern Italy. And it's worth pointing out that there is a massive difference between places that you love to visit and places that you would consider living in, because I often do that would I live here test.
Yeah. What passes the would I live here test?
Well, is it easy to get a job? How expensive is it to find accommodation? What's the public infrastructure like in terms of public transport? How easy it is to get to know people? There are cities where it's nigh on impossible to get to know. I lived in Paris when I was doing my dissertation. I lived there for 3 years. And it was very, very difficult to get to know Parisians. So the only French friends I had were people from outside Paris who'd also come to Paris
and
to live.
And had no friends.
And they were dislocated as well.
Yeah.
So we all found ourselves. I'm half Italian. and it's one of my favorite places to visit. You know, the food, the art, the beautiful towns. But I'd never live there.
Why not?
The bureaucracy,
okay.
The red tape, the rigid job market. Like, La Dolce Vita doesn't pay the bills. That's the real
okay.
issue. Similarly, like India. India's an incredible country to visit. Like, just the assault on the senses in the best possible way. You know, it's like, but all of it, like the infrastructure issues, the sheer mass of problems that a country like India has, particularly in urban centres, is like, would just make it impossible to live there.
So what passes the test?
Palm Springs passes the test.
Wow, yeah, we only, sure, obviously we did it on The Ultimate Guide, we talked
so
about
Palm
it.
So Palm Springs, for me, passed the test. Now, part of it, I will admit, is an age thing, so I'm at that age.
Now that you're staring down the barrel of pensionable
absolutely,
retirement.
Yeah, absolutely, where it's like, I want, you know, I don't care about having like a really vibrant and dynamic nightclub scene. But, you know, it's the weather. I think I said when we did Palm Springs on The Ultimate Destination, for me, it was is that my, like, I like a mountain aesthetic, a seaside aesthetic is lovely. I've just been Turkey, which is a wonderful example of that. But I think the desert aesthetic is my favorite.
Yeah.
I like dry heat. I don't really enjoy humid heat, but I love the heat. And so the desert. And I like the liberal bent of Palm Springs, where there's a general atmosphere of like, you do whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's an incredible, it's not a conservative place. I really, you know, the mid-century modern architecture, I just the golf.
Okay.
Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, the golf.
Like,
as
and
well.
That comes into an age thing. I love playing golf. So, you know, it's, I've often said now, maybe perhaps right now America has, you know, there are, what are they called? Headwinds.
Yes.
That we have that has to deal with. But Palm Springs is yeah, still one of my favorite
okay.
places.
What then in all those years since 1991 has been your best travel experience?
China in the year 2000.
Okay.
So I spent 6 weeks traveling in rural Yunnan province, which is in the southwest of the country. So, you know, whatever it is, 2,500 miles southwest of Beijing. And for 6 weeks, I met a couple of people, but for the most part, I was traveling on my own. And that sense of like being witness to a culture that is as alien to me as any I could imagine at the time, and particularly in a time, like it was 25 years ago, but it might have been, well, as it been 100 years ago, such was the lack of access to the West that Yunnan had at the time.
Yeah.
And so I would, you know, I was spending a lot of time in rural areas where you might meet people who maybe have seen a Westerner once or twice in their life, and, you know, who would just really want to be interested in you. And I was so helpless that I was you're forced to ask, and you're relying on them.
Yeah.
And the friendliness and just the sheer sense of like community that you fell into. And I loved it. I think that it, in hindsight, I think that's the most rewarding travel experience I've ever
and,
had.
And have you been back to China since trying to replicate?
No.
Wonder how different it would be.
I imagine it's...
Parts of it may be similar.
Perhaps, but also as well as China has, in terms of tourism, particularly international tourism, has really developed. Like even Beijing, I know anecdotally from friends, like in 2000, the Hutongs were still very much intact. And this was a city that hadn't even started to prepare for the Olympics.
Yeah, there for the Olympics.
So I mean, they destroyed Hutongs. They were really westernizing in the sense of making it Western friendly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure Beijing is every bit as fascinating as it was when I was there 25 years ago. But I'd be curious to go back now and see how accessible it is as a city to the likes of me who don't have a word of Mandarin.
Yeah, because it was funny. So I was there, and obviously this was, you know, a kind of a period of peak openness and kind of, you know, welcoming for, you know, because they were welcoming the world to Beijing during those Olympics. And like that, there were still parts of the city that they, you know, they hadn't quite redeveloped.
Yeah.
And there was just walls built. They love walls.
They love
a wall in China. But, you know, they just had them kind of almost cordoned off. In a kind of a clever way that it wasn't obvious. But when you looked for it, you could see, I can't really make my way to that area, no matter what. And it's because, you know, the stuff hadn't really happened there yet. They didn't want people to make their way to that area.
Which is interesting.
But then you go down to was it Waofujing Street? Was that the big street? And it's just like, oh, yeah. You may be on a strip anywhere in the world. It's just Nike shops, Adidas shops, McDonald's, Burger King,
and do
KFC.
They have like the money changers in behind the curtains?
Yeah, they had that. They had the rickshaw guys, but like that. I remember, my uncle was with me, and I remember a guy some kind of rickshaw guy trying to hassle him a little bit. You know what I mean? Come on, get in here, and I ultimately probably going to try and swindle him a little, because a couple of guys.
Yeah, you were going to swindle him.
Yeah, sorry. A couple of guys came just out of nowhere, plain clothes. Put their arms underneath this rickshaw and just led him away.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And people just stood away and let him out. They were just plainclothes police officers or whatever they were. You know, so there was that level of security. There was a real visible level of security, and then there was a quite obvious invisible level of security.
For sure.
Everywhere as well. But sorry, it was incredible. The subway system that they built from scratch was amazing.
So they didn't... I tell this story occasionally, and it's... So a friend of mine who's Chinese-American, who I was staying with in Beijing, so she was writing down the names of places, like the Forbidden City or whatever, and I'd go down and I'd get into a taxi. But I'd go to the taxi room.
Oh, you'd have to show them.
And I'd show them the thing. And on the first day, the amount of taxi drivers who rudely kind of brushed me off and then just drove away. And I was like, what is with this place? And it was only when I went back to my friend Caroline's apartment... And she said to me, she was like, oh, but a lot of taxi drivers here don't know how to read. And so what you're doing is they're incredibly embarrassed.
Sorry, that's interesting. Yeah.
They're so embarrassed. They're not rude. They're really mortified by the fact that, like, you're confronting them with their own lack of ability. And that's why they're brushing you off. So it's really important if you can learn how to say it phonetically.
And yeah,
I mean, I don't know if that's the case now, but it was then.
Yeah, well, certainly we had to write stuff down. The name of our hostel, basically, is what you had written down. So no matter where you were, you could show this to somebody.
Can I tell you my worst travel experience?
Yeah, dude, tell me your worst travel experience.
China, near 2000.
Same trip.
It was
on.
Both the best and the worst. So it was, in hindsight, like travel can be brutal. It can be incredibly lonely and be very challenging. It's the difference between travel and going on holidays. In holidays, you kind of set it up so for your ease. Travel is about whatever it is, like your own interpretation of discovery or whatever. So many times during that trip, I felt lost and lonely and stressed. I got altitude sickness climbing Malong Peak, which is a 4,000 meter high peak in Yunnan. And I was left to fend on my own, and people didn't obviously understand what was wrong with me until this woman just kind of realized, oh, she put two and two together. But a lot of the time is that, like, all you want to do is just be able to kind of communicate with someone, and more than just a hand gesture. But what it was is, in hindsight, all of these experiences kind of melded into something that, like, you know, oftentimes when you're young, they go, oh, you know, travel really, I really found myself in India, or I found myself. And it's just like, but... And it took me, I remember being very kind of dismissive of that concept until I came back. And it was, what I realized is that we all assume that we have certain limitations. Like, you know, and it can be anything. It's just like, I won't sleep in a dorm. I won't eat that food. I won't ask a person in a language I don't understand. It says, but when you're forced to go beyond your own limitations, there's an excitement and a sense of genuine accomplishment and realizing it's like, wow, I didn't think I could do that. And I did it and I survived. And so China was very much that for me. And in part because I wasn't traveling with friends. I was on my own. And so it was both the best experience I've had. And also, there was another experience in Guatemala where I was arrested by the army and, you know, and they were trying to extort money out of this, like, poor Irish guy. And that scared the living daylights out of me. But no, but I think that China trip is both the best and worst.
That's a great answer. Fionn, pleasure to see you. Thanks a million for coming into us. You'll have to tell us the Guatemala trip in more detail the next time we're here on the roof. Fionn Davenport, the travel journalist and the Lonely Planet author. Fionn, thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.